Well, good evening. It's good to be here and share. I'll admit, when you come to a little group like this, something about the dynamics feels a little different, and I was thinking about it as I was sitting here coming in. I thought, well, maybe we should just have everybody sit on the front three, and I'll get down like a teacher and walk back and forth, and we'll just have class and make people read part of the scriptures. But I don't think I'm going to do that. But I was thinking about something else. I had one little story to start my message that I usually did, but then as I was driving down here, I thought about another story that would actually go with the message. And I was thinking about it because I thought, well, the children didn't really get a children's lesson. Now, they did get a little story, but I'm going to tell you children another story. Now, this story is true, but it has some make-believe parts to it. Is that okay? Okay, Dave, I make believe a little bit, because a little bit of make believe is good. But I want you to think about this, and this is a story for us adults too, because it ties right into our message. So, once upon a time, there was two little mice. Okay, and they weren't grown up mice yet. They were probably, maybe I'm going to say, teenage mice, or 10, 12 year old boys, because girls don't do bad things. So they were two little boy mice. And the one name was, I don't even know what their names were, but we're going to call them Peter and Sam tonight. Now, Peter was a little bit bigger and a little bit older than Sam, and he thought he was tough. And one night, Peter and Sam were in the pantry of a big farmhouse, and in this pantry there were shelves, and there was lots of food. And every night, Peter and Sam would go into the pantry and find food. They would find bread bags, and they would chew holes into the bread bags, and they would eat little pieces of bread out, and then they would go running off. And one night, Peter and Sam came into the pantry, and they were on shelf number 3 from the top, I believe. They're running along, and all of a sudden they stopped. They saw something that wasn't there the night before. Now, Peter, being the bigger, tougher one, said, "Ha, I know what that is. That's a trap." And Sam looked at it and he said, "Oh, that's what my dad told me about." Now, Sam's dad had told him that sometimes in the house there's traps and you have to be careful with them. But Peter was like Big Jim in this story, and he was tough, and he's like, "Ha." He said, "Watch this, Sam." And Peter walked up there and he said, "You have to know how to do this." And he went up real carefully, and he saw there's peanut butter on the trap, so he went up and he just took a really light lick. He said, "If you just lick really softly, nothing will happen." Peter watched him, and Sam right up on the trap, and he licked and he licked. And wow, Sam didn't know what to do. He's like, "That looks good. I mean, fresh peanut butter, no chewing through the bag or anything. You can just get right on it." But he heard the words of his dad, and he's Dad's like, "Do not go near those things." And Sam watched him, and he thought about going up to the trap, and then he was scared, and Peter's like, "You're a chicken. What, look at this." And he's almost done. After a while, he licked the last little bit off of their trap and walked off the trap and was like, "Ha, told you so." And Sam, he felt kind of sheepish or whatever. Okay, well, they went running off, and they down the shelf, found some more things, and they dropped down to another shelf, and back through, and down and onto another shelf. And what do you think they saw but another one? Another trap with peanut butter on. Oh, and Sam's like, "I don't want Peter to think I'm a fool. I don't want him to think I'm a sissy." But yeah, he wasn't sure if he should, and Peter's like, "Come on, I'll show you how." And Peter, he goes up on there and he gets ready to lick, and he licks a little bit off, and see, it's fine. So Peter gets up on, and he's like, "Should I? Shouldn't I?" Dad says no, but Peter's saying it's fine. And so, okay. And so he comes up on and he goes to take a lick, and it did at the same time, and bang! Now, I told you part of that story is true and part of it is make-believe. The make-believe part is that little mice don't talk. And daddy mice don't tell their mice about traps because mice aren't that way. But the story is true because one time in our house, we had trouble with mice in the pantry. And so this is it. I got two traps, and I put peanut butter on both of them, and I put one on shelf number two or three, and one two shelves down. And went to bed. And I got up the next morning, and I went in, and I looked in, straight in, and there was the trap with no peanut butter on it. It's like, you little rascals. But then I looked down, and there was a trap with two little mice in it. And they were little mice. They weren't grown-up mice. They were teenagers. So that part of the story is true. But, you know, I thought it was a wonderful lesson. First one they got away with, right? Licked the peanut butter clean. Oh, it was so good. Went down to the next one, and they started to work together on it and got them. Now, the next story that I do often tell with this message is we also had an infestation of skunks at our place a number of years ago. Every other evening, you go to bed and open the windows and the nice cool breeze coming in, all of a sudden, boom, skunk smell would hit you. Oh, again. Go out to the barn at night, open the door, and there'd be a skunk inside. Finally, I got tired of it. I went to my brother and said, "Do you have any live trap?" He's like, "Yeah, I have one." So, borrowed a live trap from him. And I thought, okay, I'm going to set this out there. What are skunks like? Skunks like eggs. Okay, so I got a plate, and I broke an egg, put it in the dish, stuck it in the live trap. Set the trap, went in and went to bed. Next morning, I come out, skunk. And I trapped a handful of skunks that summer. I don't remember exactly how many. But that picture came back to my mind. When it came out that next morning, the skunk was still alive. Okay, the trap didn't kill him. And actually, think about this message, the snare of pleasure seeking. Snares actually rarely kill their prey right away. Now, in the case of the mouse trap, yes. However, as we think about snares, a snare was often made to capture animals. Kind of a noose, set it up in the forest at a place where the rabbits run through. Hopefully it runs through, trips the snare, pulls the noose up around the animal. Sometimes it may have strangled the animal, but many times, even in today's world with trapping, the trap rarely kills the animal right away. In the case of a live trap, the idea of a live trap is to trap it in a humane, harmless way so you can take the animal and either dispose of it or move him to a new location, okay? And I want us to think about this snare idea because many times we can think that, well, it doesn't really hurt. Skunk was fine the next morning. In fact, he was had a nice bedtime snack of raw egg. But he was no longer free. He was under the power of me then, and his life ended that day. But I wanted to think about that. And we can get maybe deceived or kind of misled in our thinking that, well, nothing's really happening. The snare of pleasure seeking. A snare has the idea of capturing something and then you give up your freedom and you're under the power of someone else. I was trying to find the verse quickly here before Paul talked to Timothy about, I believe it was, that talked about those who are in the snare of the devil and then taken captive at his will. In other words, we're taken into the snare of the devil and the devil has us, and then the devil's like, oh, what am I going to do with you now? Just like the animal in the live trap. The owner of the trap gets to decide what they're going to do with the animal. I don't think pleasure seeking needs a whole lot of introduction. However, I would like us to think about just a couple of things. I think probably most of us think about pleasure seeking as something big out there and something that the church has written a standard against and something that we don't do, right? In all reality, probably all of us have went pleasure-seeking today. Whether it was the cup of coffee when you woke up, whether it was the soda at 3 o'clock, whether it was music you turned on, you seek for pleasure. We seek for a good feeling. So what is pleasure seeking? I'd like to just broaden it out and say, well, it's any time you go after something that feels good, really. Is the only pleasure seeking that is worthy of being concerned about the big things that are out there, the things that take lots of money, the things that take lots of time, the things that bring us into company with the world, the things that are written in the decrees, or is it a much bigger subject than that? And I simply want to put that out there because I want us to be thinking about it. Now, this idea of pleasure seeking, this idea of pleasure, bodily pleasure, physical pleasure, has been something that mankind has looked at through the ages. In fact, especially in the, as you get into some of the Greek philosophy, and I want to just touch on three philosophies that came out of Greek thinking that kind of addressed this subject of pleasure seeking a little bit. One was Gnosticism, which came into being around the first century AD. A little hard to tell when it started, but Gnosticism, well, for one thing, the Gnostics did not believe in the incarnation of Jesus Christ. They didn't believe that God came down and became flesh. But they believed a number of things. One of the things that they believed is that everything material is evil and spiritual things, only spiritual things are good. They also believed that the only way to salvation is through a special knowledge that you receive. In other words, salvation is not for everybody, but it's only if you can think your way, think high enough, think deep enough, and figure this out, become saved. And one of the main erroneous views that came out of that is that since the spiritual and the physical is separate, what I do in the flesh doesn't matter, it's only what I think and philosophize, that's what counts for salvation. So if salvation is found through wisdom and knowledge, I can find salvation in that, but then what I do in my flesh doesn't matter. Okay, so that was the one wrong view. And, you know, Paul talked to Timothy about that. He said, in the last days, men will be lovers of pleasure. They'll be lovers of pleasure more than of God. They'll be lovers of themselves. Okay, so that's Gnosticism. Out of Gnosticism also came this idea of asceticism. And that is the idea that since salvation is found through wisdom and knowledge, then out of that came this idea that, well, maybe we actually ought to deny ourselves of all physical pleasure. And in other words, the more I deny myself of this physical pleasure, the better equipped I'll be to understand the wisdom and knowledge of salvation. Okay. In fact, just today, I was listening to Brother Nathan teach 7th and 8th grade history, and he was talking about somebody who spent 30 years, I think, or was it, I don't even remember the length, it was a long time, on a platform, elevated on a pole, 6x6 platform. And that was really something. I mean, he just denied himself everything. He couldn't even stretch out to sleep, he had to stay curled up. And you have this whole thing of monks living separate from the nuns and not getting married and sleeping on beds of nails in order to focus all your attention on figuring out what God was and connecting with the spirit world. Paul talked to Timothy about that too. He said, in the latter times, people will come and they will command you not to marry and to abstain from eating of meats, which are created by God to be received with thanksgiving. So there's people that are going to say, no, don't do that, don't get married, don't eat meat, deny yourself of these things. Paul said, that's false. These things have been created for God, by God, for us to enjoy with pleasure. You will also read about the Epicureans in Acts chapter 17. When Paul was at Athens, he debated with these people. The Epicureans said that the physical and the spiritual are so far apart that if there is any soul, it's probably connected to the body, so when we die, it ceases to exist anyway, so what? Probably not going to be much after death. There's no soul after death. the spiritual is so far from the physical that the gods probably don't actually care about us. So their philosophy of life was kind of this thing, don't worry, but be happy. So whatever makes you feel good within reason, do that. Go ahead and eat, but don't eat too much, because if you eat too much, you'll have a stomach ache tonight, and that wouldn't be good either. Okay, so they understood the reality that you can pursue pleasure, but then you kind of have the hangover, right? So like, watch out, don't do too much that you have a hangover, but do enough that... So basically, just kind of look for that perfect pinnacle of pleasure in life. Not too much, not too little, and just kind of be even. And maybe as you think about that, you say, well, isn't that what we kind of aim for a little bit? You know, kind of the Goldilocks of Christian experience, where it's just like, not too much. We can have some, but not too much. And middle of the road, right? You know, there's ditch on each side of the road, so we stay out of the ditches and we're fine. Well, the thing I want to remind us is that all three of these philosophies came from men sitting around trying to figure life out without the Word of God, right? They were looking at life and saying, okay, what's the ultimate here? So we cannot necessarily go to man's ideas to figure out what we should do with pleasure. So I told you that we probably all sought some pleasure today. God has created us, and we were very good. Now, God has created us with these things called neurotransmitters in our brains that help us exist. And one of these, well, in just a basic form, what happens when you think a thought is that you have neurons in your brain, nerve cells. Now, these nerve cells are not actually connected. There's a really tiny microscopic space between all of these nerve cells. And in order for a message to go from cell to cell to cell to cell to cell and complete an action or a thought, there needs to be little neurotransmitters or little ships that carry the thought from one cell to the next, basically, is what happens. And there's a number of different types of neurotransmitters that take care of carrying messages. Okay, one of these is dopamine. And dopamine is what we call sometimes the pleasure drug, because dopamine makes us feel good. And it's exciting, okay? When we do something fun, our thoughts go through and they get carried through the neurons on dopamine, and we say, wow, that was fun. And it's actually really important to us, to life, because what happens with depressed people is that there's none of that. They will lay in bed and stare at the wall for 10 hours, and there is no purpose in getting out of bed. There's no reward. Okay, dopamine is very important in reward. It's important in learning. When you go to school and you work really hard on compound interest and you get the right answer, it's like, yes. It's important, because if we don't have that, we become vegetables. Okay. And I'll say this now, I'll probably say it later, but we have to remember that God created everything good. Satan's the one that wrecked it. There's also a neurotransmitter called serotonin, and serotonin is one of those that is just more of a what we would call contentment, perhaps. We say, this is great, but I'm not actually going to pursue more of it. I'm just okay with the way things are. I don't know what does it for you. Sometimes a model train will do it for me, I think. You can just watch it go. It's like, that's neat. But you're not necessarily going to just go desperately back for it. It's like, a beautiful sunset will do it for you. But you're not going to, like, 20 minutes after sunset, like, man, I wish I could see another one. It was just like, wow, that was great. Maybe some of us, we get that from being in a crowd of people. Oh, this is just wonderful. Some of us get it away from a crowd of people. Okay, but it's just that contentment. Now, there's a doctor that studied into this, and he wrote some books on how the food industry has used dopamine to drive people to eat. and to eat bad food. Okay, that was his main thing. But he talked about these two neurotransmitters, dopamine, which just wants more and more and more, and serotonin, which says, ha, it's enough. And he compared them to pleasure, he linked them to pleasure and happiness. And as he thought about this, he kind of put it into two columns. I don't want to share that with you right now. He said that pleasure, if you think about it, okay, experiences, actions, thoughts, you can kind of put them into one of two camps. You can put them in pleasure or you can put them in happiness. How do you know where to put them? Well, he said it's like this. Pleasure is short term. It's short lived. Happiness is long term. Pleasure is felt in the body. And happiness is felt from the shoulders up in your head. Pleasure is taking, getting something. Happiness is in giving something. Pleasure happens alone. You do it for yourself. Giving is done in a group with other people. Pleasure is found in substances, caffeine, alcohol, drugs, heroin, etc. He said, you cannot find happiness in a substance. A substance will not give you happiness. It'll give you a pleasure. It'll spike. Pleasure in the extreme will create an addiction. He said, anything that you can put olic after, that's a pleasure. Workaholic, alcoholic, you name it. If there's an aholic, that's a pleasure. Because you can just be driven without any quenching of the appetite. He said, in happiness, you can't have too much. It's just, you never overdose on it. Now, that's from a secular viewpoint, but I simply share that because I think it helps us understand when we go out and we pursue something, if we're really honest with ourselves, we can start to understand what we're chasing. Then, of course, as a Christian, you know, we talk about joy, which I believe is even beyond happiness. That's something that transcends. But think about contentment. Contentment, say, I'm satisfied. I'd like to look at three truths, I believe, that the Bible tells us about pleasure. I told you that God created everything good, and I believe that God created pleasure. Psalm 16:11. David said, thou wilt show me the path of life, the path of life, how to live a life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. There is pleasure in having a relationship with God. Okay. James 1:14, I'm going to have you turn there. I don't know if we have a song. Do you have a song after the message? Let me sing 689 at the end of the message. It's, Lord, we thank thee for the pleasures. I'm not going to make much comment on it right now, but it's a wonderful Thanksgiving song. And in that song, he talks about the pleasure, the simple pleasures of life that God has endued upon us. And it's as we sing that song, I want you to think about it. We're not going to sing it right now, but when we get there, it is pleasures that we can latch onto no matter where we are in life. Some of them we might be denied of because of situations, but there are pleasures that God gives to us that we can get anywhere we go, no matter our situation, no matter our circumstances. James 1:14. Here James puts those two columns again. And I want you to think about the comparison about these two. There's this verses 14 to 17. 14 and 15 talk about something that it grabs a hold of us, it makes an olic out of it, and the end of it is death. It pulls us down, 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 and it's death. And on the other side, it says perfect gift from God. Where like it says about the fruit of the Spirit, I can't pull it together now. Against such there is no law. There's no restriction on it. James 1:14, but every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. It's like the mice walking up to the trap with the peanut butter. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Good and perfect gifts. They're just right. Now, that's number one. God created pleasure. Okay? It's not a bad thing. Truth number two is that Satan takes what God created and wrecks it. God created everything we see today. Now, you say, what about all the bad? Right. Satan didn't create anything. Satan simply took good things that God did and twisted it. A very real example is music. God created music. God created the scale. God created notes. God created harmony. God created melody. God created chords. God created everything in music. But Satan takes it and just turns it 15 degrees. And sets it on edge. God created snow. And God created us to enjoy sliding through along snow, right? Little children get a sled and they sit on the snow and they go sliding down the hill. Then we get older and we need a little more sliding down the hill. Somewhere we leave God's intended pleasure and go into the devil's. And then I'm working for Red Bull and I'm doing stupid stuff on a snow, on a ski slope, right? So where does that change? God created the snow, right? And God created, I don't know if there's anybody here that never enjoyed just like, yeah, here we go downhill, right? Oh, ooh, that was neat. Okay. Was that a bad thing? Is it a bad thing to ride a horse? Our forefathers did. Somewhere along the line, probably. But then somewhere along the line, we lose our senses and we ride the horse until we fly into the air and then break a leg doing it. Like, somewhere Satan twisted it. I'm getting off my point, really. No, I'm not. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 6, 11 to 14. But I want us to think about that. Satan's counterfeits of the good things that God created turns it into something that comes around and bites us and drives us to death. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 11. They're getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. Moses is talking to the children of Israel. Verse 10 actually says, when God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware. Okay? The thing that I find interesting about this, I don't know how many of you have ever felt like maybe your garden is taking you away from God? I don't see any looks of recognition. But he's saying, listen, when you get into the land of Canaan and you get a house and you get a well and a garden, beware. We take all that for granted. Like, that's a non-issue. We need that. That's a necessity of life. And, like, now, if we go water skiing, that'll take us away from God. But look, I don't know if any of us have been tempted with our vineyard to pull us away. But do you see what happens in culture and in time? I remember 2 years ago, I was listening to, I don't teach history in 7th and 8th grade, we're together, we take turns teaching some classes. The other teacher teaches history, I teach science, but sometimes I sit and listen to him teach. And I was listening to the history teacher talk about ancient civilizations and how that When civilizations became established, one of the signs of an established civilization was the presence of leisure time. And I just remember that so vividly. I was like, oh, I don't know if I ever really thought about that. Like, we take leisure time for granted. We need it, right? If we don't have leisure time, we're going to go crazy. But what he's saying is, before that, civilization was all about survival. You spent all your waking hours making sure there was something to eat, making sure you had something to wear, and making sure you had a roof over your head. And as you think about different times in history, that's all they did. Okay? But as those needs became met, we have a free evening. What do? And that's what God is warning them here, because he knew that when you get leisure time, watch out, because you're gonna start to forget, because you know how that is. When you're in a tough spot, when you're going through a tough time in life, you're calling out on God every hour. God, what are you doing? God, will you do this? God, what about this? God, what should I do here? All right? But when things get easy, it's like you could go 3 days without God. You can go several days without reading your Bible, because we're busy doing this and that, and yeah, wow, the peas are doing well and the chickens are growing and we have a free evening and we went fishing and catch fish and throw them back, and we don't even eat the fish. We just, it depends what kind they are, we throw them in the field because we don't want too many of those in the pond, and we see who caught the biggest one. And so the fact of abundance. 1 John 2:15-17, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. So this world is now full of things that Satan has twisted. And Jesus is saying, John here, don't love that. Okay, careful. It's actually not of the Father, but it's of the world. It originated with God. All the raw materials and everything, Satan has taken it and put into the heart of man to create things that turn us away from God. Point number two is Satan takes the good that God created and wrecks it. Number three is pleasure needs to be regulated. Hebrew writer tells us to lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. Paul said to put off the works of the flesh. Paul also said, I keep under my body and bring it under subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I become a castaway. Paul knew that he had a work to do, and he said, listen, I know that I'm going to have to have some self-discipline here, because if I don't, his ministry was going to fall apart. I need to deny myself of a few things, otherwise my work's going to be in vain. Paul also wrote down that he said, actually, all things are lawful to me, but not all things are expedient. In other words, he recognized that there's a number of things out there there's absolutely nothing wrong with. He was talking specifically about eating things offered to idols there, I believe. And we can get into that thing, and we can look at all the fun things to do, trip, whatever, and say, well, there's nothing wrong with it. Today on the way in from recess, one of the boys was like, hey, I heard the Blue Angels are going to be at Harrisburg. I said, should a Christian go to Harrisburg and see the Blue Angels? Well, why not? Well, I said, you didn't even think about it. All these things are out there. And then they said, well, you know, if you live in Florida, I mean, you're just like working on a house and they're flying there. So what are you supposed to do? Just like work at the house and not look at the Blue Angel flying through the air? You know, all these little rationales come out. And I suppose, yeah, is there a sin in watching an airplane? Probably not. Is there a sin in sliding down the hill? Is there a sin in going on another trip? Is there a sin in going to Florida for 3 weeks in the winter and sit with all the other Christians and do nothing but play games and then come home when it's warm again? Or You could put it whatever in there, right? Yeah. Is it a sin to buy a $5 coffee every day? Different flavor each day of the week? Yeah. All things are lawful but not expedient. Paul said, I will not be brought under the power of any. And there's that aholic again. All of a sudden, like, yeah, got to do it. Got to have it. Got to need to. I just don't know what to do with myself. You know, and this is just, this is so huge. It comes down to just like pulling your phone out of your pocket. That's a pleasure. And it's an addiction. You just like, I don't know what else to do, so you pull it out. Little things. It's not just big things. Where I go and, you know, how much money you spend on it. It's a principle, I think, that goes through all of life. For the rest of the message, I want to move quickly here, but I think I simply have four snares of pleasure seeking. The actual snares. What are the snares? I realize tonight I'm probably not going to stand up here and say, well, okay, we're going to make two lists. Here's a list that you can do, and here's a list that, no, you may not do. All right, I don't know if that's what the committee wanted, but they didn't get it from me because I'm not going to stand up here. Because I don't, for two reasons. Number one, maybe I'm not strong enough to do it. But the other thing is, I'm not going to stand up here and give people a list and then they look at it and say, hey, yes, mine's not on the list. I can go do it. Okay, because that's humanity. We tend to look at the decrees and say, well, it doesn't say that we can't do that one, so let's go do that one. Okay, that's not the idea. That's legalism. But I want us to think about what snares there are in pleasure seeking. You're going to have to, each one of us in our own life, we're going to have to say, like Paul did, that would be fun, not today. That would be fun. No, never, actually. So look at what I want to do as a church. What I want to be as a church? No, I'm not going to do that. What I want to be personally? I'm going to say no to that. Okay. Somehow we have to each individually come to that point and say, what do you want to be? Where are we going to head? All right, for the four snares. Number one, pleasure seeking takes resources. And biggest two resources we have are time and money. Right? Proverbs 21:17 says, he that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. If you love to eat out, it's going to cost you money. It's that simple. If you like really, really nice vehicles, it's going to cost you money. If you like top-of-the-line shotguns to go duck hunting, it's going to cost you money. If you need 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 deer rifles, it's going to cost you money. You say, so what? Well, what do you want to do with your money? Someone told me the story one time of a school in Lancaster County that, well, they weren't sure if they could pay their teachers much more. And at the same time, the men on the board were running to Illinois buying farms. Take your pick. Do you have money or don't you? Time. See then as ye walk circumspectly, not as fools but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore be not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. We have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and we don't know when the end's coming. No idea. So when you're going off pleasure seeking, you can't be doing something else. Okay? We have this idea we could maybe do a little bit of each. If you're on a trip, you can't teach Sunday school. If you're at the cabin with all your other friends, you can't build a relationship with your brotherhood. You have to decide what you're going to give up. Done. Number two, pleasure-seeking dulls our perception of life in a fallen world. We forget that here in America especially, Satan has become really creative in helping us to think that this life is pretty good. And we go after all these little things, and then a loved one's in the hospital and you have your your schedule's all upset and you don't know what's coming next and everything's a turmoil and you say, this isn't like this. Well, we're really not promised anything more. God said to Adam and Eve, said, okay, you sinned. Now, Eve, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children. Thy desire shall be to thy husband. And to Adam he said, cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. And thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to thee. And thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread until thou return to the ground. We forget that we live in a fallen world. And one of the goals, I believe, that Satan has in offering all these things is to help to kind of numb that. But our best life is not now. Our best life is in the land over yonder. Is it wrong to do something fun? Is it wrong to have an enjoyable evening? No. I'm telling you, this is a snare. Okay? We have to be aware of this. And like I said before, you know, you look at the lifestyle we live versus even what I think about sometimes, like what I grew up as a child with. Like, I guess they made better shoes back then, but we would get like a new pair of shoes at the beginning of the school year. And hopefully they made it to the school trip, and then we would maybe get a new pair for the school trip, and then you kind of wore those through the summer. And I if I remember correctly, even into the next school year. You know, and now it's like you need 4 or 5. Yeah, I'm probably the worst one of that. You know, you need a pair for this and a pair for that. And, you know, but that's how our world has just, the lifestyle. You know, the microwave quits and you're like, how are we going to heat up our water? Well, like, our, you know, 50, 60 years ago, there's nothing like a microwave. Life was slowed down. Now we want everything right now. All right, number 3. Pleasure seeking destroys the purpose and the testimony of the church. 1 Peter 4, real quickly, verse 3. For the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, abominable idolatries. And you say, well, that's some pretty bad stuff. But you know, revelings, just simply party. Just get together and have a party. Make a big charcuterie board and eat it. That's pleasure, right? It's like, oh, it's a feast for the eyes, and you just eat all the meats and cheeses. And it's, you know, when does, yeah, I'm not saying that's wrong, just when you think about it. And then, but then he says this, he says, wherein they, I think speaking of the world, they think it strange that you run not with them to the same excess of riot, speaking evil of you. Now, it's interesting here because I believe Peter is almost like assuming that's what's going to happen. Peter's assuming that the world's going to say, these people are weird. They don't do anything. And I wonder sometimes if the world's actually doing that. Or are they saying, oh, Mennonites again? I don't. Someone told me this over New Year's Eve. There was a neighborhood, there was a really loud bang. Some of the neighbors were chatting or something. I was on a group chat or something. Someone wondered if they knew who it was, and one of the neighbors, must have been a non-Mennonite. She just said, oh, it was probably the Mennonites. You know, I can enjoy a good explosion, I guess, once in a while. But that kind of grieves me, I guess. It just frustrates me. It's like, that's what we're known for? Like, we're the wild ones. We're the ones that have the big trucks and the boom. And I don't know. We're the tough ones. Maybe it's my personality. Maybe it's not. What does the world think of us? It's like, wow, okay, there goes a Mennonite. Yeah. You go up to Pine Creek and most of the cabins are owned by the Mennonites. So. Is that okay? I don't know. To wit, that God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing their trespasses unto them, and hath committed unto us the word of reconciliation. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So pleasure-seeking, the one snare is to that just destroys our witness, and people no longer see our Father in heaven. All they see is a rich Mennonite or however. Number four, pleasure-seeking brings spiritual disconnect from God. In the parable of the sower, Jesus said that that which fell among the thorns are they which, when they had heard, they go forth and are choked with cares. Anything wrong with cares? Not really. It's hard to avoid them sometimes, isn't it? Cares, riches. Is it wrong to be rich? I don't believe so. And the pleasures of this life, and bring forth no fruit to perfection. But each one of those has the possibility of choking us out, at disconnecting us from God. We can get all wrapped up in our cares and forget about God sometimes too, right? Because it's my problem, I got to figure this out. Money, got a bonus, $5,000. Ooh, right? And we forget God. And the pleasures of this life, we're having fun on the weekend. Each one of those has, and then Jesus says, so you're doing all that, but you're not bearing any fruit. Quite serious. And then he says there in John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. If a branch is not bearing fruit, he's cut off and then thrown into the fire and burned. In closing, Revelation 3:14. This is John writing to the churches, writing to the seven churches what Jesus had given him, what the Spirit gave to him. Chapter 3 and verse 14. And unto the angel of the church of Laodiceans write, these things saith the Amen, the faithful and true, the witness, the beginning of the creation of God. I know thy works, that thou art neither cold nor hot. I would thou wert cold or hot. So then, because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I would spew thee out of my mouth. Because thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. So they had this problem. They felt like they had it all, but yet God's saying, actually, yeah, on the one hand you do. But on the spiritual side, there's a lot lacking here. And he says, I counsel thee to buy me gold tried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich. And white raiment, that thou mayest be clothed, and that the shame of thy nakedness do not appear, and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. And he's saying, I have something better for you. I have pleasures for you. There's pleasures at my right hand. There's things that's going to give you lasting happiness. It's going to give you lasting joy. Come pursue some of these things. But it's so hard because we have the fallen nature and we tend to go for the quick, the easy, and we don't like to work hard. The snares of pleasure seeking. Are we willing to analyze our life, say, okay, wow, what am I pursuing? Am I pursuing the things of God, things that will last? Or am I tempted to just, after the quick, after the easy, and the things that in reality will tend to draw us away? May God bless you.